Climbing Gold is a production of Duct Tape Then Beer.
Yeah, I am recording, and the levels look, I don't know what any of the levels mean, but they look kind of the same as normal.
July 2021.
Basically a hiss in every room, and this bathroom is the only place where you can escape the hiss.
Climbing Gold, season two.
Yeah, another day at Climbing Gold. I swear every time we record, I'm in a different room with its own set of limitations and technical challenges.
Where are you right now?
I am in my bathroom with an external Wi-Fi router thing outside that doesn't really work. I am straddling my sink and it's very hot.
Okay, Alex, so what are we doing with season two? I feel like it has been a saga.
So when we started Climbing Gold, we thought that we would be leading up to the Olympics, that we thought we would be doing a handful of episodes as the climbers got prepared, and then we would be in Tokyo interviewing the actual Olympians, and the whole podcast would be leading up to and covering the Olympics. But then, of course, Tokyo 2020 got canceled because of COVID, and so we went ahead with Climbing Gold anyway, because it turns out there's a lot to talk about in the world of climbing. So now with climbing in the Olympics in Tokyo 2021, there are no spectators allowed, there's no external press allowed, even the competitors aren't allowed to be at the Olympics longer than is required for their specific sport. So climbers don't even get to be there for the opening ceremony because climbing is later in the Olympics. And so, needless to say, we will not be there interviewing Olympians. Instead, we're just talking about the Olympics remotely.
You're doing commentary for the Olympics. Have you heard how you're going to be able to watch the competition? Like, are they going to give you like a live stream or something for it?
No, I have no idea how climbing will be viewed.
I don't either.
Literally no idea. I'm assuming that since I am supposed to be doing some kind of commentary around it, I'm assuming that at some point someone will tell me how it works and allow me to watch. But, otherwise I'll just be trolling YouTube like everybody else in the world trying to figure out who's winning in climbing.
Yeah.
Though, to be fair, that's how most of my life is, having no idea how things are about to happen right up until they happen. keeps life adventurous, you know? It's all about living that life of adventure.
When we started this project, I think it was like almost 2 years ago now, or like longer than 2 years ago, I remember emailing you or texting you something like, hey, I want to do a podcast about climbing going to the Olympics. And I was thinking like, oh, I'll hear back from, you know, Alex in a few weeks or something like that. And it was like almost immediately you were like, I'm in. What about the Olympics speaks to you?
I mean, I personally like the Olympics because I like seeing excellence in human performance. I like seeing people do something very, very well. And the Olympics is basically a display of the finest physical human talents in the world. I mean, it's just nice to see people perform at an elite level. But beyond that, I mean, I'm particularly excited about the Olympics this year just because climbing's making its first appearance. You know, I mean, I've always liked watching track and field and gymnastics and whatever, but, you know, I'm a climber and I love climbing, and it's obviously a lot more exciting to watch the Olympics if there are people rock climbing in it.
Yeah. So, couple notes. This season is going to feel a little bit different than the first one, a little looser. We're going to drop several episodes in the coming days because realistically for climbing, history and the future of our sport is being defined right now. We'll talk to competitors and coaches, delve into the elements of climbing as a sport few of us consider, discuss the difficult sides of competition and the bright sides of growth for our sport. If season one was the past and present of climbing, this season is a glimpse into the future because, like it or not, what happens in the next few weeks will have a lasting impact. And to kick off season two, we wanted to start with a seemingly simple question. How did climbing become an Olympic sport? And it turns out the courtship between climbing, once thought of as fringe or extreme, and the mainstream sporting world has been in the works for longer than a large portion of our community has been alive. We talked to leading expert, journalist, author, and our newest producer, John Bergman, about how we arrived at climbing's Olympic moment. And Alex, I'm just going to say it. I think you're about to make some enemies with the sport of curling when they listen to this.
All seven of them?
Yes.
Yeah, fuck them. I can get seven death threats. I'm like, that's fine. Actually, isn't a whole curling team like 17 people? I feel like the ice is like swarming with people with brooms.
Oh, man.
You can't tell if they're curling or if they're just getting the ice rink ready for the hockey games. I'm Alex Honnold.
I'm Fitzco Hall.
This is Climbing Gold.
Yeah, my name's John Bergman. I'm a writer, a journalist. I cover the competition climbing scene, and I've been climbing for 21 years.
John has joined our team as a producer to help us create season two. He was the author of High Drama, The Rise, Fall, and Rebirth of American Competition Climbing. And I think it might be safe to say that he could be the leading expert in the world on the history and evolution of competition climbing.
So you want to talk us through the path that climbing has taken to get to the Olympics? I mean, it's been a long time coming, and climbers have talked about the Olympics for a long time. Talk us through that journey.
Yeah, so climbing is about to make its Olympic debut. But what is interesting is if you look at the history, there have been all of these little, kind of notable, interesting moments or interesting instances of climbing either getting into the Olympics in other forms, maybe not as a full-fledged competitive discipline, or also as, maybe in a kind of an earlier or different iteration of climbing. And one of the most important examples of that, I think, is what's known as the IOC's Award for Alpine Climbing, or the Olympics Alpinism Prize, however you want to phrase it. It was the Olympics recognizing alpine climbing as a thing, basically. We're talking about the early 1900s, on the heels of what is widely considered the golden age of mountaineering, which had concluded in the late 1800s, and so we're in the afterglow of that. The IOC notices this cultural, pop cultural interest in mountaineering and alpine climbing, and they latch onto it. And so beginning in 1924, the Winter Olympics, which were in Chamonix, the IOC decided to give an award to 13 climbers that had attempted to climb Everest 2 years earlier. And it was a pretty sad, tragic, unsuccessful attempt ultimately, and you know, half the crew perished and were killed by avalanches and whatnot. But still, it was a remarkable human achievement, or a remarkable example of the human spirit. And the IOC then gives an alpinism award again in 1932 to some Germans who did an ascent of the Matterhorn in the Alps. And then the IOC gave another award for alpinism, another prize, in 1936, the infamous Games in Berlin that were attended by Hitler and whatnot. And then World War II happens, and I think the IOC amid that kind of recalibrates a little bit and realizes that any endeavor that has as much risk as alpinism does, especially alpinism at the time, it's probably not something that the IOC should be awarding or celebrating. And so after World War II, when the Olympics come back in the mid-1940s, alpinism is no longer a part of it. It's not a discipline anymore that the IOC recognizes. And so it fades into history as this peculiar, quirky footnote.
And John, it's worth pointing out that these type of endeavors, it just doesn't even look anything like what modern rock climbing looks like, right?
Yeah. You have to fast forward many decades. From what I have found, the earliest mentions... Yeah.
You have to fast forward many decades because climbing still didn't exist yet.
Right, yeah.
Are literally no climbers to compete.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have been possible to have it in an Olympics in the mid-20th century. But the earliest mention I can see of the Olympics being talked about by climbing media, meaning articles mainly in climbing magazine, Rock and Ice, stuff like that, happens in the late 80s, which would make sense too, right? Because the UIAA, which is the global governing body that forms and starts to oversee climbing competitions, they form in 1987. So it makes sense that right around that time, a couple years later, is when we start to hear buzz about, hey, maybe climbing could be an Olympic sport someday. I actually have I wrote this quote down. This is from the August 1988 issue of Climbing Magazine. And it says, "The recently formed World Cup circuit features contests in the United States, Italy, France, Spain, Bulgaria, and Russia, and competition climbing will likely be included as a demonstration event in the next Winter Olympics in Albertville, France." So there it is. It's in print, referencing climbing likely being in the 92 Olympics, Winter Olympics. France is the host country of those Winter Olympics. And as the host country, France can, I don't know if it's still true, but back then they could choose one sport, anything they wanted to include in the Olympics, to bring it in as a demonstration sport. And so people were thinking, yeah, climbing, it's like a shoe-in, right? Because France, not only is the UIAA headquartered there, but France, you know, with the Alps and stuff, it's also the birthplace of climbing as we think of it. So so I think there was a lot of optimism that it would be included in those 92 games.
So why did it take 30 more years to get there?
To have something be an Olympic sport, you have to have a lot of countries that have national governing bodies for that sport, right? And so if you're talking about like 1988, 1989, there was no USA Climbing then. There wasn't any sort of national governing body until the 90s for the American competition climbing scene. So I think that was problematic. So I think that expectation that climbing would be in the 92 Olympics, I think maybe the logistics just weren't there.
The idea that climbing was a sport, even that idea, it was really in its infancy. Realistically, competitions had just started happening on manufactured walls rather than out on the crags. The first climbing gyms were just springing up across the world. But in America, we were in the midst of a bitter internal struggle over bolts that almost ended climbing as we know it in the States. And the International Olympic Committee, the IOC, is a vast, powerful entity with serious internal politics.
In those Winter Olympics, 1992, they had an event called the Pre-Olympics that was held like a week before those Albertville games. And climbing was an event that was part of those Pre-Olympics. The climbers, they didn't stay in the Olympic Village or anything like that. But what's interesting is the other sport that was like also vying to become a real Olympic sport was curling. And curling actually ended up winning out. Curling ended up, it was a demonstration sport in those 92 games, and then it ended up being included in later Winter Olympics. And I've talked to competitors that were there at the 92 pre-Olympics, and the climbers were staying in the same hotel with the curlers. And so I think that there was like some like angst between the climbers and the curlers because they knew that they were kind of both vying for like this this Olympic inclusion. I always think it's funny to imagine like the climbers going down to breakfast or whatever at the hotel and like seeing the table of curlers and kind of like
that is so crazy.
Waving their fist.
It's funny because I've always assumed that I've always thought of curling as a bit of a joke in terms of a sport. And I always assumed that it was in the Olympics because it was some kind of old historic thing. Like it had been in the Olympics for over 100 years. But now to hear that curling beat out climbing, like that is so absurd. That's crazy.
Yeah, it beat out climbing, and I should not speak authoritatively about the history of curling, but I think it did. It was in Olympics back in like the long time ago, and then it had a hiatus, and then it came back. But yeah, it was in like 88, 92 as a demonstration sport, and then I think the 98 Nagano Games is when it officially became like a steady part of the Winter Olympics. So
I'm gonna interrupt. I'm always surprised anytime I watch the Olympics how much coverage curling gets. Like
I know, like who cares about curling?
And I feel like it's on all the time. I don't know why. Like I'm just like the first week of the Winter Olympics, I feel like it's steady curling.
I wonder if the curlers think the same thing about climbers, right? Because we're always I'm like, ah, curling, come on. But like I don't know. Maybe if there's like what would the climbing gold, curling gold or something? Like maybe they're kind of thinking the same thing about climbers. I don't know.
No, it's called the curdled gold.
Curdled gold.
It's like, oh man, that's just sad. I don't like curling.
I definitely think it's a bummer that they beat us out for the Olympic spot.
So after climbing gets beaten out by curling, then what happens? I mean, why doesn't climbing go into the next Olympics?
One of the answers that people that work at like the IFSC and kind of the organizations that were involved in discussions, Olympic discussions, one of the answers they say is that you had to change perceptions of the people at the IOC, at the International Olympic Committee, the people that make the decision to include a new sport. You had to change their perception of what climbing was, because a lot of them considered climbing to be an extreme sport, right? I think we've all had those discussions, those conversations with people that aren't climbers, and they have this really skewed, misguided perception of what climbing is. They think it, you know, maybe it's just like this thing for an adrenaline rush, or this thing where you're kind of embracing like danger and risk, and it's not this methodical thing that we know it to be, right? And it takes a long time to change those perceptions. I think it could have perhaps gone quicker and smoother, but the complicating factor was the X Games.
Fort Adams, Newport, Rhode Island. Robin Urbisfield tried to get a grip on women's sport climbing.
What are the X Games but like a celebration of sports as these big risky things, right? Extreme sports, like it's in the name.
Hans Florin in the speed event.
The first X Games in 1995 was actually called the Extreme Games, and then they changed it to the X Games. And it was, the X Games were marketed and written about as, this is like a quote, the Olympics of extreme sports. So, and climbing was, of course, part of the X Games from the get-go. And so that kind of clashes with this, the other idea of convincing the IOC that climbing is not an extreme sport, right? It's like, it's kind of like, imagine you're telling the IOC, like, climbing should be included in the Olympics because we're not an extreme sport at all. But at the same time, you're kind of like, oh, well, pay no attention to the fact that we're like this marquee sport in the extreme games, right? Like, it's this weird contradiction.
As he slips on the right-hand side, hits the button, and Hans Florin, again, as he does an upside-down somersault and is lowered to the ground, has now continued the streak, never losing a speed competition on the North American continent.
What else happened in climbing in the 1990s? Was the youth boom, right? Like the people, the Chris Sharma, Beth Rodden, you know, Tommy Caldwell, Katie Brown, these young kids and kind of like taking over the sport in a lot of ways in terms of the best performances and whatnot. I don't think the IOC was ready to have that influx of a sport that was kind of perceived as like a kid's sport. I know that the Olympics always has kind of its youth standouts, right? There's always the stories about like the 16-year-old kid or something that like does something amazing. But in general, I think the IOC, especially back in the 90s, still wanted to present itself as kind of the pinnacle of adult competition, right? And then you have this sport that's booming with kids, and all of a sudden there's like these 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds that are like crushing. It's kind of in conflict to that. So I think, and that's all happening in the 1990s. So that's why I think some of these Olympic discussions got kind of stalled in that decade.
That's a really interesting perspective on competition in climbing, because I mean, that's exactly what I grew up through. And it's funny because when you grow up and start climbing during all that, that all just seems totally normal. But now hearing you say it, I'm like, yeah, that does make sense. That seen from an outside perspective, seen from like an old person running the IOC, you'd be like, this is totally untenable. Like, there's no way we're allowing these guys into our storied institution of the Olympics.
It's interesting to look, you know, fast forward a couple decades later, and the IOC includes climbing precisely because they think it can help them reach the youth, the kid demographic, right? The younger audience. That turned out to be a big allure, a big draw of climbing in 2016, but that wasn't the case in 1994, 95, 96.
And why did that change? I mean, what changed about the IOC or about the Olympics that they suddenly wanted to appeal to kids?
Just all I really have to go by is just the statements that the IOC made, President Thomas Bach made, which is just that, I think it was just kind of this realization that like viewership was down for the Olympics. I think this realization that kids have so much more media grabbing at their attention these days, that it's no longer a guarantee that just because we are the Olympics, people will tune in, right? I think it was like, we actually have to pursue them to an extent. We have to like embrace sports that they would actually like the younger audience would actually want to see.
After the break, climbing gets serious and the IOC proposes. And John hits his ultimate fandom.
In 2006, the on-and-off romance between the Olympics and climbing continues, and the IOC decides to put it in the Olympics as a demonstration sport. Like, there's no actual climbing. It's just climbers showing how to climb, like, just doing cool moves and stuff, but not actually competing.
It's kind of funny to think of, like, bouldering as a demonstration sport, right? You can't contest it. So what do you do? Like, what, I don't know. What do you do? Are you just like, here's... You know, this is bouldering. This is a back flag. This is,
actually,
I don't know.
I mean, well, in some ways, that's probably what goes on in isolation at all the comps, where everybody's just sessioning together and you're just seeing elite boulders perform at an elite level. And they're all sort of, you know, edging. I don't know. I mean, I could actually imagine that being sort of amazing. It's like, it doesn't need to be an overt competition to see people trying to show how strong they are on boulders, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. Right after those 2006 Olympics, the demonstrations of climbing at those Olympics, that's when the Olympic push for climbing really picks up steam. It's absolutely come from the IFSC. The president of the IFSC is Marco Scolaris. He was a big proponent of the Olympics. He was really intent on getting climbing included as an Olympic sport. When the IFSC forms in 2007 and he is elected president, he actually holds a vote. He holds a vote with, you know, all the federation, all the kind of the people that are the board at the IFSC. And the vote is, do we want to make an Olympic push? Like, do we want this to be a big focus of the organization? And what ends up happening is it's a unanimous vote that they do want to make that a focus, a primary focus of the IFSC. That's 2007 that they make that vote. So you can think, okay, well, like probably 2008-ish, 2009 is probably when they started really doing like dialogue about it and stuff. And then in 2015 is when there are three climbing events, you know, the three we know, speed, bouldering, and lead, that are proposed to be included in the Olympics, along with baseball, softball, karate, skateboarding, and surfing. And this is 2015. And then in 2016, the announcement is made that climbing is going to be an Olympic sport. 2006, 2007 to 2016, like that's actually pretty fast. But I think, as we've talked about, like if you're starting at 2006 or 7, you're really kind of starting at the midway point.
With that perspective, it feels very slow. You know, if you're starting from 1988, then you're like, wow, it's taking an incredibly long time to get climbing into the Olympics, especially with the Olympics delayed. You're like, now you're up to 33 years. You're like, geez, that's an entire climbing lifetime.
That's 33 years. That's several generations of competitor, right? Like, and it's too bad that a lot of those competitors from the 90s or from the early 2000s, they never got to be on an Olympic stage, because it's kind of fun to think about what they would have, you know, what Katie Brown or what Chris Sharma or what Robin Urbisfield, like, what would they have done at an Olympics?
I think we know that they would have won. But...
There you go. Yeah.
Like, I'm curious, like, you know, from each of your perspectives, when that announcement got made personally, did that feel like big news to you?
I was over the moon, because I, as a high schooler and kind of like growing up, I was really into run. I was a track and field, you know, runner, and I ran cross country and stuff. And so I was into running, and for running, like, the Olympics have always been like the thing. So I kind of grew up just as a big fan of the Olympics in general. And then so to suddenly know that climbing is going to be part of that fandom, the two fandoms, my climbing fandom and my Olympic fandom, were going to, you know, join forces. it was pretty cool. I was definitely pretty stoked.
That's mega. That's peak fandom. That's all
right.
The fandom you can all you can handle. You're going to burst
with our powers combined. We have ultimate fandom.
That's exciting. No, I mean, I have to say, I mean, I'm also excited for that, just because you know, I mean, I've always loved the Olympics too. I mean, I love seeing human excellence, you know, and seeing excellence in sport. And so, I mean, it is exciting, but I think it is just having grown up with the Olympics always being just over the horizon. You know, it's like after 25 years of kind of waiting, you're like, ah, you know, we'll just see what happens.
Yeah. And like you said, like, it's still, it's like, I'm excited about it, but in the back of my mind, I'm still kind of like, well, like, just like wait till there's actually a climber, like, walking to the wall to climb, because as we know from this past year, you know, the world can kind of get topsy-turvy and everything can change. So.
Or wait until it actually gets broadcast, you know, like, will anybody actually see it? Because, you know, if climbing happens, but it's all sort of locked down and there are no fans and it doesn't get any airtime on TV, like, does that even affect climbing?
I mean, I would imagine they'll want to present it pretty significantly because it was such a pillar of their whole, like, goal of getting more young audiences. Right. Like, it would be weird to work so hard to include these new sports for the younger audiences and then, like, not make them readily available to viewers. So
interesting. Yeah. I hope so. I mean, it'll be interesting to see.
I think it's super quickly worth backing up. Right. While we were doing our reporting and talking with the International Federation of Sport Climbing, it really became clear that the inclusion, you know, while it was this incredible win, it also came with a lot of decisions and caveats, and it wasn't totally ideal. Basically, the IOC gave climbing one set of medals for women and men. They capped the total competitors at 40, and no country could have more than 4 athletes except the host country, which could have up to 6 depending on qualifying events. And it led to some tough decisions for the IFSC about the event. John, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
So the IOC accepted climbing, included climbing into the Olympics, and they said to the IFSC, you can choose, we'll give you one set of medals, you can choose what you want to do, how you want to contest these medals, right? Like, and so the IFSC could have done a number of things. They could have just brought in a single discipline, like, okay, we're going to have bouldering be the Olympic climbing sport. Or they could have combined 2 disciplines. Or they could do what they did and combine all 3. The reason that they combined all 3, and I've heard this from people at the IFSC, the reason they did it is because they knew whatever climbing events make it into the Olympics, that is where the interest is going to go, and that is where the money, additional sponsorship money, all that, that's what's going to go, right? People, sponsors and people, they're going to want to follow whatever climbing discipline is the Olympic climbing discipline. And so the IFSC's choice to include all 3 was so that there were not any sports left behind.
How did a lot of the Olympic hopefuls react to the announcement of the combined format?
Yeah, it was definitely not popular. It was definitely not popular. It's still not completely popular, although I think at this point people have just kind of, like, warmed up to it and accepted it. It was not popular because nobody was an all-arounder, right? It didn't suit anybody at first because climbing had never been combined in that. The events had never been combined in that sense before. So it was so foreign. And it was so strange to all of a sudden force these different skill sets to kind of live together. Yeah, a lot of objection to that. I think, Alex, I even remember, like, reading articles where you were asked about it, like, as it was, you know, in, like, 2016 when it was, like, first announced. Am I remembering that correctly?
Could be. I mean, yeah. I've certainly, been asked about the Olympics quite a bit.
I mean, like, the combined discipline specifically? Like what you think of it?
Yeah. Though I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I've always been very supportive of it, because even though the competitors don't like being forced to do something new, I think it's great. You know, I mean, if you're trying to measure the best climber in the world, I mean, it should be as broad as possible.
But I understand why competitors on the surface wouldn't like it. But for me as a viewer, yeah, like, it's really exciting. I mean,
for sure. I mean, speed climbing is the most interesting thing for a viewer. And so, you know, I know that core climbers complain. They're like, I only want to see bouldering. I only want to see lead climbing. But you're like, dude, the speed climbing is what the average person thinks is incredible. It's like, yeah. you know, throw them a bone. It's like, it's the Olympics. Like, at least pander to the audience a little bit.
I think it's important to point out that there is criticism maybe that could be kind of pointed at the format. But actually, the reason it exists, the reason the Olympics will have the combined format, is to precisely to save, sort of quote unquote, like save these other save all the disciplines, so you don't get any of those disciplines left behind in terms of fandom, in terms of sponsorship, and all that stuff.
No, I definitely think that. I mean, it's kind of the only choice. It's like you can't leave some aspects of climbing behind because suddenly they're just abandoned. That'd be so sad.
I don't know if that explanation about the reasoning behind it was communicated as well as it could have been, because maybe if people had realized that from the get-go, there would have been less objection to it, but maybe not. I don't know.
I think the real thing that should have been communicated more was that there was only one medal at stake, however they chose the format. And, you know, basically it's better to have more climbing involved in one medal than less climbing involved in the one medal. You know what I mean? Because most people that I've heard complain about the format in the Olympics, they're just like, well, they should have different, you know, different competitions. And you're like, yeah, that's great. But if you only have one medal to give and that's all you're allowed to do, then you may as well bring in as much climbing as possible into that one medal. Unsurprisingly, it's not that easy to get Olympic medals to give out. You're like, oh, you know, big surprise.
And after like 30 years or whatever of trying to do it, like, we'll take what we can get. You know, okay, one medal. All right, that's fine. We'll take it.
After the break, we talk Team USA and find out why it's time for competition climbing to grow up and leave rock climbing behind. So how would you say that Team USA has been doing in climbing so far?
I've been really, really thrilled with how Team USA has been doing, because I remember when the Olympics were first announced in 2016, there was all this initial, there was like instant excitement around just in the climbing community, at the climbing gyms. I don't know if you can think back, but like people were like really stoked about it. And I would always say like, yeah, it's really cool, but like, you know, like an American might not even qualify, right? Like, we might not have an American even into the Olympics. And so then the hope is just like, oh, well, let's at least hope that we get one American to make the Olympics. And I remember when Brooke Rabatou qualified at Hachioji at the World Championships in 2019, it was kind of like, in my head, I'm like, okay, like it's kind of a sigh of relief because everybody can kind of continue with their fandom now, because there was indeed going to be an American in the Olympics. And then, of course, we ended up crushing, you know, in Toulouse, you get Nathaniel Coleman and Kyra Condie qualify. And then at the Pan Ams, Colin Duffy qualifies. So, it's great. I mean, like, we've got four Olympians. There are four Americans in the Olympics, and that's not every country can say that. Some countries don't have any. Some countries, for example, Canada has just two, Sean McCall and Alana Yip. So I don't think there's any way you can look at the fact that Americans have four and not just be impressed by that.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a high point for American competition climbing right now, because I think that on the global scale for the last 10 years or so, I mean, just Americans have never really excelled on the World Cup circuit. And so I think to see four Americans qualified for the Olympics is sort of a exciting sign.
So would you say that in a way that the USA seems to sort of almost be overperforming right now? Because if you look at how this year's World Cup circuit, for instance, like, we've been doing the best we've ever really done as a team. I mean, we've had some great competitors through the years, but like overall, like as a country, we've been having some, you know, more success than we've ever had before.
It's interesting. The question of has USA, Team USA, overperformed, I think that kind of implies that it's almost like a fluke, right? It's like they shouldn't perform this well, but they have. And so I don't know if I would say that we have overperformed.
I don't think it implies a fluke. It implies that they've sort of exceeded the expectations.
In that sense, yeah. I think then maybe it would be fair to say that they have... They've overperformed. They've certainly exceeded expectations, and especially to your point, when you compare it to kind of like World Cup, consistent World Cup results.
When you look at the World Cup results, you know, week after week, the finals rounds are you know, five Japanese out of the top eight or something like that, and you're sort of like, oh, clearly Japan is going to be hosting a full team of four because they basically dominate every competition they go to. And, you know, the U.S. has just never had that. I mean, with American competition climbing, you see, you know, a couple people in finals maybe, and you're like, wow, like what a big week. You know, it's not the consistency that you see from Team Japan or something like that.
So I'm definitely really curious, like, is this, are we starting to see kind of like a new, the dawning of like a new era in American climbing where maybe we do have the depth, the team depth, the consistency of teams like Japan or teams like Slovenia? Because now it's not just saying we've overperformed with the Olympics. It's like, well, we also, you know, we did exceeded expectations in a lot of respects at those World Cups as well, right? And so it's kind of like, oh, well, when does that switch flip and you're not exceeding expectations anymore, but you start to kind of like, oh, maybe we can start expecting Americans to have some depth and some consistency at the global level. I don't know, maybe we're like entering that new comp climbing era.
You know, right now our sport in the last 10 years, it's growing, the standards are rising. The sport's become more diverse, more accessible. It's less foreign to the mainstream. There's been like this complete level of steady growth inside of our community. I don't think climbing really needs the Olympics. I think that the Olympics needs climbing. Billions of people watch it, but the ratings have been falling. The city's bidding for the Olympics. They've hit record lows in 2018. And I just, from your standpoint, like, do we need the Olympics or does the Olympics need climbing?
Competition climbing has always existed and been coupled with real climbing on real rock, climbing outdoors. Climbing is a house, right? And you have these different, every discipline and every niche has its own room. So you have like the room of trad climbing, you have the room of ice climbing, you have the room of sport climbing, and comp climbing has always just been like a room in that house. And I think that has been fine so far for comp climbing to grow bigger. It would need to separate itself a little bit from the rest of those rooms, and it would need to go and become its own house, because otherwise it's always going to be connected to those other disciplines and not allowed to grow without a ceiling or without any connection to those other disciplines. I think if we really want to lean into further separating competition climbing from the rest of climbing, then the Olympics can really help it do that. It can really help give competition climbing an identity and an aesthetic and a fan base that is completely detached and not part of the rest of the climbing world. And I think that's I think the Olympics are good for competition climbing. Another thing is the Olympics are the platform, the best stage for creating megastars of a sport. And so the Olympics give us an opportunity to create megastars of the competition climbing scene completely separate from the stars of the rest of climbing.
It's just interesting. I mean, your analogy of climbing as a house and competition climbing moving out and becoming its own house.
Yeah.
In some ways, that reminds me a lot of the ski industry and how Olympic skiing and sort of resort skiing feels very different than big mountain skiing. And, you know, professional skiers can either be a big mountain skier or an Olympic skier, but there's almost no crossover. Or, you know, I guess the only crossover is people going from competition skiing eventually transition to the outdoors as they get older. And, you know, I just wonder if climbing is going to have that kind of hard break to it as well as it progresses.
To reach its full potential, it needs to be allowed to go out into the world and like create its own identity separate from the rest of climbing. That's not to say that it has to like lose the soul of the rest of climbing, right? Like just in the sense that if a I don't know, like, I don't want to belabor the metaphor, but like if a teenager or a kid moves out of his house with his parents, like he's still learned a lot from those parents, and he still draws a lot of who he is or she is from those parents. But it is possible then to go elsewhere and like develop its own identity, you know, a unique identity and a unique persona. And in the case of competition climbing, its own fan base, its own world. I think it's important to keep in mind that the Olympics should not be the end goal. And it's easy to kind of get carried away and think that it is, because it's such a monumental thing. And it's such a great thing that climbing is included in the Olympics. It's exciting for all of us. It's exciting to like, you know, be able to like turn on NBC, like network television, and see they're talking about climbing. That's like a really surreal moment. And I'm not saying there isn't some downside to that, but like, it's cool. It's cool that climbing is in the Olympics, but I think it's important to realize that the Olympics should just be a stepping stone. The goal is not the Olympics. The goal, in my opinion, should be like positive growth. Well, why can't the comp scene become its own thing and change people's lives and better people's lives in another way? Maybe not the same way that climbing on real rock does and going to the crag does and falling in with like the other dirtbags does. Maybe comp climbing can become its own thing, move out of the house, completely separate, and it can better people's lives and change people's lives in the form of eventually having competition climbing, you know, get NCAA sanctioning, which can lead to college scholarships, which can, you know, lead to hopefully a vibrant professional circuit where comp climbers can make a living, can make a career on the comp scene. Like, I think there's room for competition climbing. This is what I mean when I say it. I hope it can establish its own identity. It's kind of separate from the whole identity of real rock climbing. I think there's room for both in the world, but I think to get there, you need to kind of further separate the two.
Thanks, John, for helping us dive into it all and joining the team. We cannot recommend John's book enough, High Drama. It's pretty cool. Check it out. Climbing Gold is a production of Duct Tape and Beer. Alex Honnold is our host. This episode was written and edited by me, Fitz Cahal. Additional editing and mixing by Matt Martin. Our senior producer is Elizabeth Nakano. Music today by Brendan O'Connell. Art direction by Anya Miller. Our executive producers are Becca Cahal and Lisi Hendricks for Duct Tape and Beer, and Jonathan Retzik and Ben Endy for RXR Sports. Thanks for listening to Climbing Gold.